Episode 129 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded April 20th, 2017. To laugh, to cry. So, guys, if you are listening to this, you're hearing a little bit of a different audio quality this week, and that is because we have a change of venue.
Da, 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 da.
We are recording live on location here at Kyle's.
On location in the glorious, luxurious Manor Del Kyle.
It is a manor. You have pillars going
I do have some columns.
Yeah.
I think I heard this was a makeshift porn studio. Is that right?
What? Just on the weekdays.
Okay, cool.
I mean, we got standards on the weekends.
Right on.
I'm just kidding. No good talent works on the weekdays. It's only weekends.
Eyes on you. Eyes on you, Kyle. So we are recording over at Kyle's place. Randy is out this week because he is attending Moon Tower Comedy Festival.
Yep, I am about to join him after this. That's actually right. Not immediately after.
We got three of the TV dudes covering this. We got you,
mm-hmm.
We got Randy, and then Ashley's covering it for the Chronicle.
So. Yep.
All three of you guys are going to be able to come in and talk about how it doesn't relate to TV, but we got press badges.
Exactly. It's funny, though, because you'll be watching like a set and you'll be like, where do I know that guy from? And it's like, oh, that's the dude from Billions, or oh, that's, you know, this character from that show. Like, several of these headliners are in tons of shows that we watch just in supporting roles.
I feel like all these new upcoming comedians go to Moon Tower. And then that's where they get picked up for all their own individual TV shows.
See, and
usually
I go
on CBS.
I go to Moon Tower to like see who the scouts are. Like,
oh, yeah.
Who's that guy in the crowd, like looking for the perfect pitcher for his, like, you know, Major League Baseball team? Metaphors, of course, but like,
unless it's a show pitch,
or and that is true.
Then it's a direct comparison.
True. Yeah.
Don't get me started about pitch.
Did it not get renewed? I don't know. Actually, know where that stands.
Oh. It did. Yeah.
But that other voice you're hearing is Mike Moody from Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
Hey, what's up?
Our podcast network host, as well as you do a couple podcasts.
I do. I do Mr. Roboto. What else do I do? Gilmore.
There's another one.
Marvel TV Binge.
There's three. What's your fourth one?
The Binge.
The new one coming up is TV on the Pod.
Four? Dude, you do four podcasts. We're just going to go ahead and make you an honorary TV dude. Now you're doing five podcasts, you maniac.
I'm a TV dude.
You slip me a five spot every time I say Permanent Record.
It's all about branding.
Best job I've ever had.
So this week we're going to be talking about a couple different shows that I am super excited about. We're going to be doing a little bit of a catch-up on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It is 14 episodes in, I believe, as of recording this, and we're going to catch back up. I think we last checked in around episode 5, so it's been 9 weeks.
Yeah,
I can do math.
Well, they had a huge break, but we'll get to that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Then we're also going to be talking about Veep, which just came back for its fifth season, I want to say. The Leftovers just came back for its final season, and you know, Kyle finally caught up on this, and so we're going to be talking about Kyle catching up and
my 2 week Leftovers binge.
How this is one of our favorite TV shows of all time.
Yeah.
For me and Mike,
of course.
So. Very excited to talk about that, as well as I think weekly we're going to be discussing Better Call Saul because we love it so much. And it's now on its second episode. But before we get into all of that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Mike.
And we have a couple ways that you guys can support us if you feel so inclined. First up, go to iTunes. There you guys can give us a 5-star rating, write a little review. We will read that here on the site. Or on the podcast, rather.
On the site?
Yeah, on the podcast, whatever.
We'll read it on site, on the podcast, for you.
That's clearly what he meant to say.
And you can pretty much say whatever you want.
Oh, yeah.
And some people have.
We've read some nasty things. Nasty things.
There's been some that I've felt very uncomfortable having to read.
Are people still reviewing you on other platforms?
Oh, yeah. You can also review us around the world if you want.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last one we got was for some weird smut site. I don't really remember what it was. Someone wrote a review on there for TV Dudes.
Review us on Trump Reddit.
That's all we were asking, yeah. So yeah, go to iTunes, you give us a 5-star rating, write a review. It's a great free way to help us out. I think all you have to do is have an account on there. Easy. But another way you guys can help us is over at patreon.com/TVDudes. There you can make a per episode pledge. And that's, you know, you give us a dollar every time we put out an episode. And in exchange, we do bonus little minis, about 30-minute podcasts that we post every single week. And only you can listen to it.
Yeah.
It's you and the other patrons. It's not you. It's not
like those private shows you normally pay for.
Yeah, but it's not like, Carl, I'm doing this one webisode just for you.
You guys don't do individual episodes for every patron?
TV Dude Cam. No.
Because that would be like three episodes.
Although we did kind of go down that route at one point, and it did not work out well for us.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. You remember what I'm talking about?
No.
Customized episodes for a certain Patreon.
Yeah. That didn't work out so well. But this week we want to thank Brandon Mack for joining the Patreon family. Hey, thank you, Brandon.
Thank you, Brandon.
And welcome. And yeah, to everyone else, once again, that's patreon.com/TVDudes. Now, Randy's not here, so we don't have to mention a third way, and I'm grateful. But we do want to mention that we have been promoting our permanent record family.
Permanent record family.
of podcasts.
PermanentRCRD.com.
RCRD.com.
And this month we are talking about pilot watching with Key and Clyde.
Yay.
Key and Clyde are a couple that review all sorts of different pilots, one each week, I believe. And you can check out their podcast, pilotwatching.com. We even wrote a jingle last week. And now I'm wondering how it went, but Randy just busted out a fresh little jingle for them. Kyle, do you have one?
Pilot watching every day, except all of the days, but this one.
That's good.
Not bad.
Yeah, you guys are going to have to settle for that one this week.
But sounds just like his, right? I need to go back and catch up.
Let's not compare them. Anyway, that's pilotwatching.com, and you can also check them out at permanentrcrd.com.
RCRD.com.
Now we're going to move on to our listener questions. If you guys like us on Facebook, if you like us on Twitter on occasion, we will put up our question post and you guys can ask us questions there.
Wait, why on occasion on Twitter?
Randy always posts some on Facebook, but he doesn't do Twitter.
Laziness.
And so I never remembered to do it on Twitter, but I did this week.
Okay.
So we have one question from Twitter, and we're going to answer that one first. This comes from our buddy Cypher, a.k.a. at Jedi Cypher. That's a P-S-Y-F-E-R.
Right.
He says, okay, it's that time once again for the best show on television, The Leftovers, to show us how it's all done. Kyle.
Yeah, Cypher.
My question is this. With a show so full of intrigue and theories, if you could have one question answered, excluding The Great Disappearance, which would it be? Thanks for the content and long live the TV Dudes.
I want Kyle to go first because he's been binging the entire thing.
Is it how many sit-ups does he do?
What? Oh my gosh, if I could only have two questions.
Kyle, Kevin Garvey, are you just doing sit-ups all the time?
Literally, Shannon's playing on her computer earlier, like not paying attention to me, and I'm pausing it, and I'm like, stop, look at this guy's abs. Yeah. Like, seriously?
They're incredible.
But no, my question would be, Christopher Eccleston, you do one season of Doctor Who, but you're on your third season of this show? Like, seriously? Like, in what world is this more rewarding to you?
This is prestige television, and that was Mighty Morphin Power Rangers garbage.
Okay,
I don't go to that extreme. I don't go to that extreme, but I sympathize. I sympathize.
What do you got, Mike?
Oh, man. One question I would want answered from The Leftovers. Oh, man. I would want to know, because I know there's a scene where there's a whole episode where Kevin Garvey dies and Heaven is a hotel in downtown Austin. Mm-hmm. I would want to know how to access the Heaven part of that hotel since it's downtown. I think I'm taking because it's real, guys.
You for your personal reasons?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Just go over there. It seemed like purgatory more than necessarily Heaven.
It's got to be better than here.
It didn't seem like anything was really ideal where he was.
Yeah.
Even the karaoke seemed a bit like forced upon him.
Oh my God. I can't even watch. I can't think about that karaoke scene. It destroys me.
It's so heartbreaking. It's so good.
Yeah, turn down service.
One full turn down service.
Turn down for what?
I would ask, what is special about the Garveys, I guess? what is different, what is unique about them. I mean, we see, especially with this season, they're really answering in with the Book of Kevin this, or at least they're posing the question, like, why does he not die? What's going on with him? So I would want that explored and given some sort of satisfying answer. And, you know, with a show like this that from the onset, they're like, we're not going to really answer things in the way that you think you want necessarily. I don't know what I can expect. But
like the anti Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah. We keep everything vague.
That was a good question.
Our next, not question, but ongoing series from our buddy Nick Thighs. That's right. Nick Thighs. Thighs. Thighs.
Isn't it Thighs?
Hold up.
Wait.
I thought it was Thighs.
This is our buddy from UGO Podcast. He has a revenge plot update for us. So every single week, the past 8 or 10 weeks, he has been giving us bits of this ongoing saga of a revenge, Game of Thrones-esque revenge that he's been plotting on his roommate. This is part the 12th or whatever.
I know, we really should have kept up with the numbers.
I wish.
I don't remember a TV Dudes before this saga.
This week, I have a new target for my revenge. You. That's dun, dun. Right. I have now updated this revenge story on a more constant basis than George R.R. Martin actually writes those fucking books.
Not hard to do.
And yet, in all that time, the TV Dudes have never once said my last name right. It's pronounced, and then I can't really read this part. And then he says, not thighs. But we're going to keep saying thighs. I am not an out-of-work porn star from the 70s, guys. Yes, you are. So, as revenge, I have made a little saucy video of my own starring Grant
wow.
Shavus. That's my new last name. Nice. And... well, I guess his name would still just be Randy. This is for all of us who have always wanted to see that underlying sexual tension come to a head. So he attached a video here. It's a little yes. jib-jab video where he put Randy's head and my head onto these characters. And it's basically me coming into this bedroom. Like we're an old married couple. Mm-hmm. And I'm sexy dancing with my dad bod. And Randy's in bed shimmying with eager anticipation.
Very similar, like, skin tone, your face and the model doing the dancing.
Very well-chosen photos. And, yeah, screw you, Nick. He also asks us, also, what TV pairing would you think have or had explored chemistry that you would like to see done more with? So they explored some chemistry between characters in a TV show, and you wanted to see more done with that than what they explored.
Mm.
Hmm. I'm kind of loving the relationship between Saul and Mike Ehrmantraut right mm-hmm. now, especially in the last episode. It feels like they can just call each other anytime and do each other a favor. Of course, there's some money involved. But I don't know. I didn't think that we were going to get so much Mike Ehrmantraut in Better Call Saul that I'm loving it. So it's kind of giving me that same, mm-hmm. that amount of, I guess, friendship that they have or chemistry that they have. But I would like it to go even deeper. I hope this season goes even deeper with that.
I'm going to dig back into the TV vault. Matt Smith, Doctor Who, in I don't remember if it was his first or second season after he took over, but there was an episode where James Corden played this big role.
That was a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like his roommate and it was kind of a one-off. It was this amazing episode. And the following season, they came back and tried to do it again. Not as great the second time, and granted, you know, James Corden now is this gigantic star, but at the time, James Corden would have made such a great,
companion
for him. Yeah. Just like exploring that relationship more. I think he would have made a good companion, not in the sense that I didn't want to see him jump in the ship and go off with the doctor, but I wanted to see like the doctor grounded, you know, when that happens where he's like stuck in a very mundane place, but has to make it interesting. And I feel like James Corden was the guy that, you know, would have been great to take us on that adventure.
You know, the first thing that came to mind might not be the best answer here. But in Mad Men, the relationship between Peggy and Don Draper, I loved it for how, like, understated it was, but you get, like, all the beats that were filled in times that you didn't see them working together, just how that relationship grew. But I could have watched them together with all of their antics back and forth in just the most mundane meetings and still been super happy to see how they interact and how that did slowly build to a mutual respect and like a more than just like a protege or apprentice and master relationship.
Mm-hmm. There was actually one episode where like Don and Joan teamed up for like just one episode. And I was like, that's kind of strange. Like seeing the two of them,
yeah,
you know, taking care of business together.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, there was something so great with that Peggy and Don relationship.
Next question comes to us from Diego Jose Valdez. I'm not going to try and pronounce your other name because I don't want to butcher it.
And we've gotten in trouble doing that before.
You guys are so white.
Yeah, Nick Thighs. Which two shows do you guys think could benefit from merging? For example, I feel like both Supernatural and Walking Dead are struggling these days. Now combine those for a few seasons. Maybe let Sam and Dean take over the cursed group for a while. Throw in some Nazi zombies for the hell of it, and just maybe you've got yourself a fun show. Maybe not a very good show, but at least a fun one. I love that. Taking two shows and just merging them.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine and The Good Place.
Oh.
Because you got similar creators, right?
Yeah.
Just kill everyone in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I mean, Mike Schur is an executive producer on one and showrunner on the other.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to see Terry Crews react to landing in A Good Place. I think that'd be good.
I would love it where like something happens where everybody in the Nine-Nine is in like a building that collapses, mm-hmm, and they like are all like brought within an inch of their lives. So they're, you know, go to The Good Place. And,
oh, geez.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's like one episode and then they're back.
A crossover. Yeah.
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 I'd want to do like really awful reality TV, but with like just super serious drama. So a couple would be like, so The Leftovers, it has like these religious undertones. So you get like, what's the Duggars reality TV show? It's like the religious family with 15 kids.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm your Christian? No.
Yeah, what is that make called? Them like villains on The Leftovers. Or like Billions, but like the Pawn Star guys. It's like now they're making deals that really mean something. And did you know that this Confederate watch was actually worn by a general? And so, like, you know, mixing my peanut butter and my chocolate.
All right. I want to see Boardwalk Empire mixed with Making History. I want those guys to jump back in time and have to interact with the whole Prohibition era where everyone's super serious and like just legit gangsters, because they actually run into Al Capone in like the fourth episode.
Oh, yeah.
Episode. But what if it was Al Capone from Boardwalk Empire?
What if they did, what was that, a Rip Van Winkle where, you know, like characters from Boardwalk Empire like, you know, fall asleep and they wake up and they're in Sopranos times.
That'd be so good.
And they have to do like a little crossover there.
Mythbusters and the new MacGyver. Just be the Mythbusters. Bullshit. Bullshit.
No.
Busted.
Give me a break.
No. Busted.
Here's why this wouldn't work. Just freeze frame. Zach McLernan says, a theme that's been posited to have developed in today's golden age of television is the great red dragon. Glorious be he in his becoming. Of the unassailable show or the how dare you show. Shows that seem to fans to be above criticism. Shows such as Lost in the past, that's above criticism.
Yeah.
And now Fargo, Game of Thrones, The Leftovers, and The Americans seem to have reached the level of prestige TV where to criticize them is to blaspheme against the many-faced god of TV and subsequently be added to the wall by the faceless men and women that are rabid TV fans. Man, He's
got some writing. When I read this one earlier, I was like, how's Grant going to do it?
For example, a common complaint against The Walking Dead is that it is bleak and misery porn. I always say that. And yet The Leftovers, while beautiful in its execution, can be argued to be beautiful yet driveling misery porn as well.
Yep. Nope.
In the end, do you view the idea of how dare you shows, as coined by Talking TV with Ryan and Ryan, becoming more of a problem in the cultural lexicon? Or is this too hyperbolic a statement?
I don't think it's a problem yet. I mean, most of those shows, I will agree, earn that prestige label. I'm going to say some TV dudes blasphemy. I'm not a huge fan of Game of Thrones. Sorry, you know, but
bye.
I think it,
no, bye, Mike. See
I think
ya.
I think
doors over there.
Not that I don't like it. I just, you know, I don't think it's on the same level as like something like The Leftovers or Better Call Saul to me.
Wait a second.
I just don't.
You caught up?
Huh?
Are you caught up on Game of Thrones?
No.
Like, where are you? Where are you in Game of Thrones?
Season 2.
Oh, my.
Oh.
But even in season 2, look at what they're orchestrating with all those characters. With all
yeah.
The world building is nuts. It's all so right.
Well, you know, I got to say this.
Well, I like writing and emotion, not world building, but okay.
All of it.
You know, I will give you this. It's I'm glad you said that because you bring up a really good point. It does take... In some cases, it takes a long time to get to that point.
Yeah.
But once you get to that point, then like all these little things just have so much gravity.
It's worth it.
And what's interesting is that is something I noticed with The Leftovers because let me guess, you didn't start watching Game of Thrones when it first came out.
I did.
All right. Let me take that back.
Coming up the works for
so
you.
So as I'm watching The Leftovers in marathon, part of me was thinking, oh, wow, this probably plays better week to week because they really want you
it
to slow it down.
Does. Damon Lindelof specifically says that he wants this to be something that you don't binge through.
Yeah.
You need time to digest some.
You really
got to
slow down. Game of Thrones, I feel like, does that at times. They want you to slow down with it, so like binging it doesn't work that great. But doesn't sound like your case.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move on to Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, hi, dudes. With peak TV, I have noticed my interest waning for certain average quality shows. The shows are not particularly bad, but the quality of basic cable shows have been getting better and that certain network dramas have become unengaging. The most recent example is ABC's American Crime. After The People versus OJ and The Night Of, American Crime feels bland and sometimes toothless with its portrayals of heinous crimes, especially in its current season, focusing on human trafficking. Are there decent shows you guys liked before but lost interest when higher quality shows started popping up? Almost read that as pooping up.
Oh, I definitely cut
did not have to tell everyone that, though.
I cut the cord on Powerless as soon as some shows came back.
Oh, Powerless was garbage.
I hated
What's
that show.
What's funny is it came out at a time, though, where like all my other stuff was on break. Mm. So I'm like waiting and I'm flipping through and I'm like, fuck, I guess I'm going to do another episode of Powerless.
It's like they did that on purpose. Yeah, there was nothing like there was no must-see TV at that point. And they dropped Powerless. Everybody's like, ooh, a superhero show. Oh, this is bad.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the one that I think I always reference when I think of like network TV shows that I dropped was watching Modern Family. I mean, I really thought that was like a great show, had an incredible cast. The writing was really quick, like just how they were like that's what the show they always rave about, like the production, like how they're able to like crank out episodes so expertly. Not like no, I was watching for that. Just like I'm not just watching for world building. But yeah, that one got dropped when I was just seeing all these other comedies that were so much more engaging and the plot lines were
There was
better.
So much good stuff out then too. I mean, that's like you had Community, you had The Office, you had Parks. Wait, was Parks and Rec and The Office at the same time?
Yeah.
With Community and like wasn't 30 Rock in that mix too?
Mm-hmm.
That's just too much good comedy.
It's still going. Modern Family's still going.
Yeah. I co-signed that, Grant.
Yeah.
You guys watch The Path on Hulu?
I couldn't get into it.
I really enjoyed the first season. The second season is actually really good, and it's actually good storytelling and world building. But the performances are what keep me watching. But lately, it's gone down on my queue with like... You know, Better Call Saul coming back, The Leftovers, now Fargo. I don't think I'm ever going to catch up on that thing. So that would probably be mine.
Yeah. Ross Brown says, hello, TV dudes and Marvel TV binger.
Hey, that's me.
Do you guys have any TV shows that you know aren't good, but you get a lot of enjoyment out of them? This is actually kind of similar to the last one.
Yeah.
Except for what are we actually still watching, I guess.
Yeah.
For him, it's Lethal Weapon and all of the DC shows.
Oof. But that's your show.
Lethal Weapon's not a bad show, guys.
I still haven't seen it.
What?
I haven't given it a chance.
Dude, first episode, man. That's all you need.
Okay.
If you watch the first episode, go not my thing, it's not your thing.
Because I like the dude from Rectify.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like Damian Wayans, but...
Oh my gosh, that's the thing, too. I hated him. Okay. I went into it like ready to hate that show.
Yeah.
Second episode, he had me. But I'm telling you, give it that first episode. I just totally hijacked my time with calling BS on his question.
What is there some other shows aside from the... wonderful Lethal Weapon?
I mean, especially thinking about that show, it's hard to think about anything else.
I mean, so I'm definitely in the DC shows camp, at least for The Flash. I watch that one, and I still go, why am I watching this? There's something fun about it. I love the enthusiasm of the characters, the costumes, but
yeah,
it's not great.
I'll go a little more embarrassing than that. Legends of Tomorrow.
Actually, that's not a bad show.
Well, no, it's not.
That's
but
my one DC show where I'm like, I guess this one a pass.
It's fun. Yeah. It's just so cartoony, right?
And you throw time travel in there and it's like, I'll do anything.
Yeah, it's a good
for
time.
A little time travel. You know, this is kind of an oddball answer. But Real Time with Bill Maher, all right? So he is the perfect example of somebody who's like, has my same opinions, but you don't represent me, man. Like, this guy can just be such a dick on his show.
A pretentious asshole.
And just like such a jerk. Even if you agree with him, you're like, but not like this.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I just keep going back. I just keep going back for more like, where's stop? To stop it.
It feels like at this point there should be someone else in that chair, right? Like he feels a little outmoded, right? He feels like of 10 years ago a little bit.
A little bit, but he's always just so topical, and he does a lot of producing too. Like he's got his fingers in a lot of other HBO stuff.
Uh-huh.
The guy, he's really out there. I don't know. I still like him for as much as I hate him. Yeah, he's an untouchable.
Kyle Volte says, hey, TV dude, since Gus Fring has shown up in Better Call Saul, how many seasons do you think we're going to get of Better Call Saul?
Ooh.
I mean, I would guess this is going to be about 4 or 5 seasons. I think we're going to be nearing the end game either with this one or the next season, because I would imagine they want this to mirror the length of Breaking Bad. That's the amount of storytelling. And that was, what, 5? Did that go 6? Like, technically a 6?
No, it was 5.
Put the 5 into 2 parts?
The final, the second part of the final season was only like 8 episodes.
Yeah, so
it was 5 seasons.
Yeah, 5 seasons. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I would be 4 or 5. I mean, they're definitely going to get another one after this one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's all I want.
How much of that do you want to be the future or the current timeline?
Oh, I want the
Do
last...
Do you want a full season of the current timeline?
Not necessarily a full season, but a good, like, 6 to 8 episodes would be good.
Oh.
So you think you literally end it? Episodes. Because that's the thing I wonder. Do you end the story before that? Or do you run the stories together?
Like, do you end with Walter White walking in his office? Or do you end with... Yeah, because
I feel like
story.
If you do it like that, you do have to have like a good season or a half a season where he's already in that role, kind of in the new life.
Well, yeah, because I want to see what it is that causes him to transition into becoming Saul, right? Mm-hmm. Like we want to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Final question is from Paul Mampilli, who says, since it was both Randy and my birthday this week.
Hey.
Happy birthday, Paul.
Hello.
What are your favorite birthday episodes? The first show I could think of is in The Simpsons, Lisa's birthday when Mike with crazy Michael
Lisa,
Jackson.
Lisa, it's your birthday.
Right?
Happy birthday, Lisa.
Turns out it was just a crazy guy. But I love it. Yeah,
that was pretty great.
This is a hard question.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's one of those where you generally like do a quick search, I guess. Birthday episodes.
It's funny. I thought of birthday comics, like birthday issues of comics.
Oh, like Superman.
Yeah. Well, no, like Jason Murphy was telling me about this. Actually, never mind. Spoiler. But it was essentially like Spider-Man spending Wolverine's birthday with him.
Aw.
Yeah. But you don't find out till the very end. And then he's just like, I just want somebody to spend my birthday with me.
Oh, Spider-Man. I remember that. He keeps dragging Spider-Man along. He's like, why are you doing all this?
He's like, I'm going to go with my favorite show of all time. All the birthday episodes of Buffy.
Mm.
Yeah. Those are really good. Especially the one, I think it's season 6. Possibly
that
7.
That one where she fights a vampire?
Yeah, that one's pretty good. But then the one where they're all trapped in the house together. That one's good.
All right.
You got any?
I got nothing.
So we got a bunch of different interesting news this week, I think, as opposed to the past couple weeks where it's been kind of dead. First one is that Hulu has put out an order for the revival pilot of Lock and Key, which is going to be showrun by Carlton Cuse, little guy that helped showrun one of the best shows of all time, Lost.
Ooh.
And then he don't do that.
Are we still?
No, I'm just kidding.
It's one of the best shows of all time,
and we will never quit telling our audience that.
So, Lock and Key is written by Stephen King's son, who goes by the what do you call that?
Moniker,
pseudonym,
pen name,
yeah,
pen name.
Pseudonym
of Joe Hill, yeah. And it's Lock and Key is a horror fantasy series described as revolving around three siblings who, after the gruesome murder of their father, move into the ancestral home in Maine. Of course, it's in Maine. Only to find the house has magical keys that give them a vast array of powers and abilities. Little do they know, a devious demon also wants the keys and will stop at nothing to attain them.
Ta-da.
Those demons.
So, they made a pilot for this a while back for FX, and I guess it didn't work out. They had Nick Stahl, I believe, as one of the leads in it, and Alex Kurtzman and Robert Orsay and Steven Spielberg were helping with the adaptation, but it just wasn't up to snuff. Now, we have Carlton Cuse doing the show running, and Scott Derrickson, the director of Doctor Strange, as well as our buddy...
Cargill.
C. Robert Cargill.
Mm-hmm.
His other, what was it?
Sinister.
Sinister, yeah.
One and two.
Yeah.
And so, he did that Tom Cruise movie, War Worlds.
Cocktail.
Oh,
Cocktail.
Cocktail, yeah. We don't have IMDb up, but we're pretty confident about that. Anyway, so they're going to be doing a new pilot, and it's going to be on Hulu. Kind of excited about this because I enjoy the comic. For as much as I've read like the first two trades, and I know it's got.
I feel like
four or five more.
This show is the original Star Trek Discovery. It's like never going to get made. It's just in development hell. Because this has been going on for like 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it didn't work out the first time.
But I guess. Yeah.
I guess they're like, we're going to give it another shot.
Yeah.
Next story. This is not necessarily TV news, but it's related to a TV show. Deadwood is... It's got a movie script now. Now, this is another one that's been rumored for like a decade now. But Ian McShane, the actor who plays, what's his name? The best character, Al Swearengen in Deadwood. He was saying, exactly. He was saying that David Milch has finished writing the script and he dropped it off with HBO. It's a 2-hour movie script, has been delivered. Doesn't know about the final product, but... He says that all the actors are on board because they really want to do this. They all loved doing this project before.
Now it makes sense why they hooked him for True Detective. It's like, okay, we'll do your 2-hour Deadwood finale if you go ahead and write half a True Detective because Nick Pilzotto is full of shit.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
I would not be surprised.
If we can have good writing back on that show.
Yes.
That's...
Yeah, I got a great name for this.
All right.
Deadwood Lives.
Liveswood.
Liveswood.
Morning Deadwood.
The next news story is that Wheel of Time has a TV series pickup by Sony. So I guess they're just going to do the production. Hopefully it's not coming on to PlayStation.
Are they spending that Spider-Man money before they get it?
They should. But Wheel of Time is this fantasy series that's written by... It was written initially by Robert Jordan. It was later picked up by a protege after he died to like finish up the last couple books. But it's like 7 or 8 books, I think. And it's this... we don't need to go into what all's going on, but it's like a lighter version of like Game of Thrones, or it's more in the vein of like Lord of the Rings, I guess.
What's the network?
Well, it hasn't necessarily been picked up by a network.
Sony.
Okay.
What is this? Red Eagle Entertainment.
Red Eagle. Yeah, Sony is producing Wheel of Time alongside Red Eagle Entertainment and Radar Pictures. but
wonder if it'll be on the PlayStation.
Something about FFX in there.
FXX.
I mean, this is definitely riding on the heels of Game of Thrones, with you know, trying to see if more fantasy, more genre like this can take hold on TV. And I'm interested. I read the first book and I just couldn't fully get into it, but maybe the show will be a little bit better.
Do you think that there's going to be a gap when Game of Thrones leaves, that we're going to be looking for something like that on television? Shirtless dudes with swords, that sort of thing.
I mean, I'm always looking for shirtless dudes.
It's like when the Harry Potter film was finished up. I didn't feel like there was necessarily a deficit for, you know, young wizards.
Yeah.
But there sure were movies being made.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No more Harry Potters. I don't know. It'll be interesting. I think the success of shows like this and that one we were talking about a few weeks ago that sounded like... we were watching it a few weeks ago. What's like Game of Thrones in space?
The Expanse?
The Expanse, yeah. Oh,
okay.
Actually, that's totally different.
I would not call that Game of Thrones in space.
Oh, that's kind of the feeling I got.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, you don't like Game of Thrones.
Right, and I like The Expanse.
Game of Thrones is The Expanse with dragons.
There you go. That feels better.
And our last bit of news is that Battlestar Galactica,
yeah,
the creator and stars are doing a reunion here at ATX Fest this year, which is awesome for me and Mike, because we're going to be both attending.
Yes.
Now, Mike, you're a big fan of Battlestar.
It's one of my favorite shows of all time.
Awesome. And I've watched the first two seasons 3 times, and I still couldn't finish it.
Okay.
That's on me.
Hey, can you read the list? Who's going to be there? I know Olmos and the creator Ron Moore is going to be there, right? But I didn't see who else is going to be there.
The reunion will be Ronald D. Moore, as well as Edward James Olmos, James Callis, Trisha Helfer, Katie Sackhoff, Grace Park, Michael Hogan, Michael Trucco, and Mary McDonnell.
They got everybody. Damn.
Yeah.
All right.
So, anyway, this was another way of us also promoting that we're going to be at ATX Fest, which is the Austin Television Festival, or Television Experience, I believe is what the X is supposed to be, but everyone calls it the ATX Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's here in Austin. It's going to be the weekend of June 10th. And if you guys get a chance, make sure you get tickets. Come on down to Austin and hang out with us, because it'll be a fun time.
Man, I'm so jealous.
Except Kyle, he's going to be like vacationing in Africa, I believe.
I'm going to be in Africa.
Oh, okay.
Also cool, Kyle.
Not watching a lot of TV, though.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this. It's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome. So the shows that we are going to be discussing in order are going to be that we're going to kick things off talking about Brooklyn Nine-Nine, then we're going to hit up Veep and Leftovers over on HBO, and then we're going to wrap things up with Better Call Saul. But first up, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So all of us, we all caught up to like episode 14?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So have you guys been watching this week to week, or did you guys do a big binge like I did?
I do week to week. I watch it on Hulu every week. It's just a great... Like, it lifts my week, you know, every time it's on. And I was horribly depressed while it was on hiatus for, 2 months, it felt like?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What about you? Did you binge?
I'm always binge. And it's one of those where I know I'd love it week to week, because every time I get back into it, I'm like, why am I not watching this more?
Yeah.
But it's coincidentally, right before the last hiatus, and then in the past, I always get them right before, the season ends.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get through my binge, and then I wait, and, you know, it usually comes back, and I'm watching something else.
I love binging this show.
Yeah.
It is just one of those that it kind of builds on itself, and I reinvest in the world and the characters, and I can go through a lot. I think I watched 7 or 8 episodes in a row the other day, and it felt fine to me. I was A-okay with it. So what's been going on this season is that after they had their whole thing down in Florida, their whole laying low for a year.
Witness protection.
They come back and they're working the night shift, and that's kind of the ongoing theme, that they're stuck doing the night shift. It sucks. They hit the same highlights they hit every season, where they have a Halloween episode that is a competitive heist. They have a Thanksgiving episode and a Christmas theme episode that, I mean, I think there's always a Die Hard reference at least made in the Christmas episode. And yeah, they've been just like maintaining the ongoing like development of all the characters. There's the relationship between what's the lead guy and Amy?
Peralta and Santiago.
Jake Peralta and Santiago. And I really like that relationship.
It is a good one.
That's the thing about this show. Like, Dan Gore is the creator. Am I right? Okay. Co-creator and Parks and Rec guy. And a lot of people compare this to Parks and Rec. But for me, this show has much more of a Cheers feel. Because it really has that emotion to it, too. You know, it's not overwhelmingly emotional, but you really care about those characters. And just the way they bond, like over time, you know, they become closer, they're a real family, and plus it just gets funnier and funnier.
It's definitely one of the things I appreciate that, you know, they don't play too much with the will they, won't they.
Yeah.
They just had them get into the relationship, and it felt pretty organic, you know, despite it being a comedy, that Jake breaks Amy up with the most boring guy in the world or whatever.
And they're able to keep that relationship funny, you know, which, you know, that's the problem with sitcoms. You get the two couple together and then they're not funny and there's no tension. But the show has managed to do it.
Well, what they do with Amy, Andy Samberg's character in this, is I feel like we've seen him do similar performances like this on SNL and some of the Lonely Island stuff and some of his films. But the way that those pieces have been wrote is that he gets his funny bit out, you know, he's kind of immature and out there, and then the scene just ends. But with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the camera keeps rolling and you're like, oh wait, I don't find this guy totally annoying, like I don't hate him, he's actually really fun and charming and I want to be his best friend, oh my god.
And that's the thing about it having real emotion, because like you said, the cameras keep rolling, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, he can act human, he can be a person who lives in the real world.
Well, and you and also he has skill that you
can recognize. He's a good detective.
Well, and you can tell he's playing around, you know, like when you just get the funny part, you're like, oh, this guy's a character, but you're like, no, this is a real dude who's also just really funny.
So I mean, we have a couple other like things that happen throughout this ongoing season. Like they have the Fugitive, which was a two-parter episode. We have the return of Adrian, the crazy detective that Rosa and him tried to have a wedding.
Oh, yeah.
And I love everything that actor does.
Adrian, don't you mean?
What was his name?
Parcheesi. No. Pimento. Yeah.
Raffy from
Jason Mantzoukas. Yeah. Jason Mantzoukas, yeah.
Yeah. I love every time he's on scene. But, I mean, mostly the biggest laughs I get are from the chief.
No.
Everything he does cracks me up. He talked about this one scene. It was like this quick little side joke he made about having like this vicious like conversation, this argument he won because he carries a map in the back of his pocket. And he says, it cuts away to the scene of him and this other guy, and he goes, "See, louse." And the guy's like, "Ah." Of course, an argument that he would get into is about whether or not one country is louse or not. It was the best.
I like how the latest episode teamed Boyle and Andre Bauer up.
Yeah.
That was really good. And they're both spent like 10 minutes figuring out how to act intimidating in an intimidating way, because neither one of them can really do it.
And their eyebrows?
With the eyebrows. Pop, pop.
Yeah. All the pumps they were doing? I was dying.
Oh, pump, pump. That's what it was.
Anyway, this is a fantastic season, and I'm impressed that it could go either way, where I was like, am I getting burnt out with this? But nope, not this season.
I like that they leave the door open, too, for tons of guest stars to come in.
Yeah. You always have this big cast of characters, and then they'll have some of them return. I love it.
Keeps it fresh.
So, over on HBO, Beep just returned for its...
Speaking of keeping it fresh.
Fifth season, I want to say.
Yeah.
And now we have the whole team on the outs.
How do you explain where everybody's at now? Because it's definitely like one of those giant Game of Thrones type shifts. We've got people in other kingdoms.
Speaking of Game of Thrones, Veep is another one of my blind spots, so fill me in.
Oh, really?
Oh, so this this show, I keep seeing talked about in political circles where it is the most realistic to how politics actually is. Like, if you put Veep up against House of Cards and you put it up against, what's the other big?
West Wing?
West Wing.
I was going to say Designated Survivor.
People say that Veep is the most accurate because everyone is a complete arrogant douchebag and they're all so self-absorbed.
This is when they walk off the podium and it's them and their staffers talking about, how much bullshit that was. You know, like, just kind of laying it down, like, how real it is and being as vulgar as possible. Like, they take vulgar creativity to, like, a whole other level in this show. I mean, just some of the, like, you know, slurs and stuff that they put together is just, it's masterful.
I mean, this is the true successor, I think, to Arrested Development, with how tight the writing is, how fast paced and the quips and, like, the rewarding rewatchability of it, mm-hmm. because you go, oh, I missed, like, a lot of jokes because they just layer them in so dense. Yeah. It's all so quick. And the performances, the ever-expanding list mm-hmm. of characters is just so impressive.
Well, and what's so great about this season, I was actually not a huge fan of the previous season. We're going to get into a little spoiler territory here.
That's fine.
But in the previous season, the Veep becomes the Peep. She's POTUS. And it really, they did a little bit of interesting stuff with it, but these are not the kind of characters you want to see win. Like, it's no fun when they're getting what they want. And granted, she was never really president, but this season she's definitely on the outs more than she's ever been. And I think it's given kind of some new life into the show because everybody is, you know, out of the White House now, or out of, where's the vice president's office at? Is it even in the White House?
I think it's, no, it's in another,
like in another building. But now that everybody's kind of forced to, like, find their own thing, you see where they all end up, and it's really funny.
Yeah, I love that everyone is separated, and we, the viewer, just naturally expect that there's some inevitability that a lot of them are come back together.
Who's the guy with the beard, the stats guy? He's in a ton of supporting stuff. Gosh, he's one of my favorite characters, too, and I'm dying that I can't think
Richard
of his name.
Richard Splett? The beard.
Yeah.
Oh, Kevin Dunn?
Yes.
Ben Cafferty?
Ben Cafferty. Okay, okay.
Yeah, Kevin Dunn.
The fact that he ended up with Jonah... do you watch any of this, Mike?
I've seen like some of the first season. Yeah.
So there's this character Jonah.
He's the super tall.
Oh yeah, he's like 8 feet tall, okay. Yeah. And he's so loud and just so out there. But then you have this like total pragmatist in the that character I was talking about with the beard.
Yeah.
Of course, he, as soon as Jonah's star starts to ride, he just jumps on that boat, and it's like, that's the thing anybody should do, you know?
They take this idiot that no one likes, and they threw him into an election that he wasn't supposed to win, but he was supposed to just kind of drain off of it, and he ends up winning, and then they're like, and then they all lose their job, so they jump on ship with him.
Nice.
And in this first episode,
is he in Senate, or... is he part of Congress?
He's the second district representative for New Hampshire. In Congress.
Okay, so he's in Congress and he's arguing about school lunches, mm-hmm. and he's like, "Fuck this green bean shit! I want pizzas every day." Oh man, I would love. Actually, we do have politicians like that in real life.
Yeah, he's just they're all miserable, and it's really fun.
And that's the problem with the show is that you watch it and you're like, "Well, damn, this is just so much like what's really going on." It's
Does it put a damper on it a bit?
Well, this last election cycle,
you're
like, everyone is terrible. But then I watch this, I'm like, well, at least these guys are finding something funny about it. So I appreciate it.
We're two fans of this, and I'm sure if you're a fan, you've already heard us say this before, but this is based off a British show, The Thick of It. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't seen that show, it's Peter Capaldi doing the same thing where he's just putting together these, you know, poetry in curse words,
that I've seen.
F-bombs just back to back, and it's both. I think both of them are really great, but definitely this one will make a lot more sense given the regionalism.
Okay, so I'm excited to talk about The Leftovers.
Da 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 da.
So it is back for its third season and final season. It's only going to be 8 episodes this season instead of the I think 12 they had. No, 10 they had the previous 2 seasons. And it starts off the first episode with The Book of Kevin. Now, I want to say real quick, we're going to spoil everything here. So if you guys haven't watched it, please skip, because this is just a show to me, and I think it's important that you guys watch this fresh.
Okay, they're no longer on the island, right? Sorry.
I never left them.
The dude with the glasses grew hair?
What?
sorry.
So, first off, I wanted to check in, Mike.
Yeah.
You love this show.
I love this show. I've been waiting for it so much. I don't know what it is about it. You know, it's hard to analyze, but it feels like every second of this show has so much depth to it. You know, it's such a deep show, and you can just sit there and analyze it forever. I'm not a big Reddit guy, but I'm sure there's, you know, a huge Reddit thread for this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
People go bonkers about all sorts of stuff right here. Not to the extent of Lost, because I don't think it's trying to be as playful with the audience about mysteries and clues. I mean, it's certainly a mystery show, but that's not kind of the main drive. It's also a very serious drama.
Yeah, it's about how people react to uncertainty and to loss. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it's a different kind of loss we've never experienced. It's this worldwide loss where everybody lost somebody close to them. But it's not a kind of loss you can get over, because there's no explanation for why these people were lost. And so these characters are kind of feeling maybe they'll come back, maybe they won't. So they don't have that closure. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think back to, I think it was the first episode where you see the party the daughter is at, where it's all these kids that are just like completely like, fuck everything. Let's just be like more destructive than your typical party, typical teen party. It's like, you know, they're playful and drinking. They're just like, no, they're doing every drug they can.
Which one of you is an STD? I want to get it.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, end of the world, because nothing matters anymore. And there was something so powerful and queasy about that scene to me that I'm like, this really sets the stage for, you know, what the entire planet's going through. Mm-hmm. The pain that people don't know how to process in there, and they're scared and they're just doing it in destructive ways.
Have you ever seen the film Children of Men?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that film paints this idea of like, and bear with me for a second, but like a post, like kind of like a dystopian future, like this idea where you can still have normal spots, but when the world's ending, yeah, the world's ending. And I feel like the show very much, like, even in like when people good things are normalcy happening,
yeah,
like, you know, like, no, the world is ending around these people, and then they're in this, like, all it takes is one person to go, well, fuck it, anarchy, and like just everything goes to shit. And I feel like there's little moments of that, you know, whenever you have, like, it seems like every episode of the show there's a damn riot scene at one point or another.
Hold the line, get them back.
Now what I'm also curious with you, Kyle, is that you hadn't watched this for a while, and you binged through the first two seasons in order to catch up with this.
I did.
And like we mentioned in the question post earlier, this is a show similar to like something like 6 Feet Under that you shouldn't binge. I binged 6 Feet Under. I know what that did to me. It was not a good thing to do, because it's so heavy. And a show like that, I think, takes time to process, as well as this.
Yeah, well, how many Xanaxes did you pop while binging this?
Well, I'll tell you, the trade-off is I probably didn't process this the same way you guys did. Or even process it like on a heavy level. Because I was watching the season 2 finale, and I'm watching it with my roommate, and she's seen everything, so she's rewatching it with me. Huge fan. And there's like little things where she's like, you know, like gasping, you know, on a second viewing. And I'm like, oh, yeah, the guy, like, oh, that thing. And I'm like, if I had, you know, spread it out and kind of taken my time with it, like, I would have got more impact at certain moments. Same thing happened. I hate that we keep going back to this, but I binged the first few seasons of Game of Thrones. Yeah. I was kind of a stick in the mud and didn't want to do it. And sure enough, I got to the Red Wedding and I was like, oh, wait, this is that thing they were all talking about?
I don't know if it had the same impact for me.
Yeah.
Well, Leftovers is the kind of show that it sticks with you. That's why it's great to watch it week to week. I find myself thinking about it, mulling it over all week. You know, what did this mean? What did this mean? Like with the season 3 finale, I think The Leftovers has kind of been about this, what I'm going to say, since the beginning. But it really underline this idea that blind faith and religion is bad because it separates you from the ones you love. Like, it opens up with, I think it's the Meyerist cult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this whole, dude, this whole thing, this woman, this zealot family thinks the apocalypse is going to come, like, next Tuesday, right? That's what they're told. And it doesn't come and doesn't come. But the mother chooses to stay in her faith while the family doesn't. And so she separates.
She needs it.
Like, she needs it.
Like, can't handle not being taken in the rapture.
Exactly, yeah. And then later on, we have Doctor Who's character, what's his name?
Christopher Eccleston.
Christopher Eccleston, quote a verse in the Bible that talks about leaving your family behind to follow Jesus. And there, that theme comes up over and over again, that if you follow faith blindly to the letter, that you're going to lose the people you love. And this first episode was really about that, which is a very strong theme.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so impressed with how they come back each season with the first opening sequence. And this is directed by Mimi Leder, who did a bunch of episodes last season.
She's so good.
If you guys go to The Ringer, they have a great write-up about why she's one of the greatest. I think they actually call her the greatest TV director, like, of all time, or at least like of right now. And the directing here is fantastic, but that whole first sequence, there's no dialogue in it, and you totally understand exactly what's going on throughout it for a concept that's actually kind of heavy to articulate, like a family going up on the roof to try and
be raptured. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you totally get the sense of it. You get the pain of that and how this resonates, like, thematically with what's going on with all these people in modern day.
See, I thought it was the story of just a kid being forced to do stuff his parents want him to do. And, like, gosh, just the crap our parents make us do.
Once again, Catcher in the Rye. That little kid was holding Caulfield. I get it. That's what makes you an assassin. Not an international assassin, mind you.
I got it.
If you pay attention to the episode titles, that was the hotel episode title from season 2.
I definitely am not on that level with you guys.
Wait, you didn't skip through International Assassin where he dies and goes to the hotel?
No, I saw that. Okay. He wakes up. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Then we're going to have to stop this episode. So
I got a question for you. So the scene where Kevin puts a bag over his head.
Mm-hmm.
And breathes in, and it was an amazing scene. It's just beautiful. I'm like, how do they do this? Because it seems like he's really,
Tell you how they do that. Yeah? Insurance waiver. Because I was like, there's a guy offside with a pen, like, ready to...
There's a medic, I'm sure, on his right, and he's actually just going...
But, yeah, like, no stunt double, like, you're, like, really...
Getting claustrophobic.
Here's what I saw when I did that, because you hear this all the time where, like, you know, movie stars are like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And then they get into the performance. Like, he wrapped that duct tape around his neck really tight. And I'm like, does he realize he might not suffocate from the bag, but he may choke himself with this duct tape?
Yeah.
Because he's just, like, getting into the scene so much. I think that's the risk of, like, not having a stunt double in there.
But Justin Theroux is, like, he's so invested in this role, right? It really comes across. But in that scene, do you think that Kevin is trying to go back to the hotel or trying to test his mortality? Like, do you think he's trying to kill himself?
I mean, in a way, I got the impression that he needs kind of the pain. I think we saw in previous seasons that he's one of those people that needs the pain to kind of remind him of what's worth living for.
Right, that's what I was thinking too.
He's super depressed.
Yeah.
and suicidal.
Yeah.
And he just kind of needs that jolt. But I think they also are trying to have it both ways with that scene, because they want to leave the audience a little bit with the impression that potentially he's trying to kill himself and he can't do it, which is what Eccleston, what's his name, Matt Jameson, is trying to allude to, that like, you can't die while you are here in Miracle or Jardin, Texas. You're unable to. It won't let you. And I think it's like he wraps himself around that, but we never see him take it off. Somehow he's still alive. Like, something in the city won't let him die, and he's continually testing that, but I don't think that's accurate.
I like the idea that Kevin has been through all this seemingly supernatural shit, right? And Nora has witnessed it too. And they're the two that have really felt and witnessed all this, what you could call supernatural. But they're like the only ones on the show, pretty much, who don't believe in any religion or any faith or any supernatural shit at all.
Yeah.
You know, which it's really interesting.
They're the cynics.
Yeah.
That is a good point. You know, that scene with the bag, I almost imagine in my head, like, now that we've returned, he's actually done this a little bit and he's kind of got a whole grasp on like the whole killing himself, purgatory, coming back. And it's just something he does for fun now. Cause it seemed like when the next scene kicked up and it didn't miss a beat, like, and he had kind of a little smirk on his face, like, oh, he just went through the routine. Oh,
he's done this before.
He's just going back to the hotel, checking things out, doing another hit song on karaoke.
Well, they did play a Simon Garfunkel song right after he came back in the premiere.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, this is getting a little ahead of ourselves, but did you also notice that Carrie Coon's
Carrie Coon?
Nora. When she leaves the house right before he does that, she hops on a bike.
She's on a bike.
Away.
Yep.
And then later at the end of the episode.
Oh, I just made the connection with the bike.
Bike lady. But yeah, that's once again getting ahead of ourselves. This is also the pilot episode, and we did not see the intro sequence, which we're supposed to get a new credit sequence.
Oh, really? Like, I loved last year's.
A lot of people liked it, but I think like so many people kept asking about it that like, yeah, we're going to do something different.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if they're just not going to have one this season, but they didn't have the title sequence in the first episode of the second season either.
Oh.
So they might have it in episode two.
Okay.
So be on the lookout.
I'm not a big fan, which granted, I definitely like the season two title sequence more than the season one.
Yeah, I didn't like the first one.
Me neither.
For the most part, I don't really like when they change it up, you know, unless it's in this case where it's something better. But yeah, Weeds did that season two. They changed it up. Or no, maybe it was season three, whenever they left the suburbs. And I was like, no.
Well, Weeds would change it every year. I loved it.
Weeds would use the same song, but a different version every year.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was kind of cool.
I did like that part.
That's what The Wire would do too, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I wanted to also mention this episode I was supposed to be in.
Ah, that's right.
I thought you were in it.
This was the episode. I don't know.
You don't know. Okay, what was the scene? What was the deal?
Here's what I'll say. So there's the scene where Kevin is walking into the church right as Matt, Kevin,
I remember it,
giving the speech on the speaker.
And it's like
I was
loud,
one of the vagrant people that are standing outside of the church.
All right.
Ooh.
There is a guy kind of notable in a cowboy hat. I was standing right next to that guy, and they cut him off right at the edge of the scene.
Wow.
So I was like, I just got cut off.
Yeah.
But I was also supposed to be in a scene where I had to sit with my back to the window, the stained glass window. So once he goes inside the church and they're filming him walking around, you can kind of see the impression of people in the background. And I'm moving around like there's a couple of us like sitting there. So you might see my silhouette.
Good enough for me.
Little claim to fame, but no, not really.
I already pointed to another guy in the scene and told my friend, I was like, that's my buddy.
Totally wasn't.
You're going to meet him sometime. Yeah. He always wears that cowboy hat.
Yeah, I told everybody you were Kevin Garvey, so I hope that's okay.
I appreciate that one. Uh-huh. Thank you. Yeah. But, it was really interesting sitting there and like listening to that audio over and over, because Christopher Eccleston during each take was like there saying that line over and over as they did all these different angles, because Justin Theroux was using that as audio cues for where he should stop and where he should start walking in. Oh. They do these steady shots.
So they're there doing the scene. You got to witness all that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And I got to see Justin Theroux. Nice. And I saw Christopher Eccleston. Justin Theroux is a beautiful man.
How tall is he?
He's short.
Okay.
He's probably about my height.
Because he's always wearing those giant boots. I wondered. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just like, wow, dude. All right. I get it.
That guy's awesome. He's a good actor.
Yeah. It's like he gave up bread and then he gave up water. No, he's just got that ripped, like dehydrated look.
You
got
to keep it tight for Aniston, man.
You got to keep it tight. Keep it tight.
We get an interesting thing with this episode where the other guys, the other dudes in this, which are Matt and John Murphy, who's now married to Amy Brenneman's character.
Not weird at all.
I like that.
And living next door. It's super weird. And then the son, what's his name?
I don't ever remember the names. Michael Murphy. So all of these three are collaborating on a new biblical book called the Book of Kevin, which is so great because Kevin is such a mundane name that doesn't feel like it belongs in the Bible. And B, I think there's a new show coming out on some channel that is called The Book of Kevin.
Whoa. So, spinoff, maybe?
Funny tie-in there. But I think it's like on CW or something. Or CBS.
That'd be a weird channel for the show to spin off to.
But what do you guys think about this idea that that these guys have heard all these stories about him and that they think he's an immortal in the city?
It makes sense that they would think this. What I liked about that was Matt Jameson is obviously he is an acolyte of Jesus, right? He's a Christian and he's always been
he's a true believer.
And now he's such a true believer, not only in the Bible, but in this chapter that he's adding to the Bible and also in the quote unquote supernatural power of this town, right? And that it's the deeper he gets into this belief, the more he pushes his family away. So the wife is like, I'm out of here. Yeah. So that just also underscores the whole theme of the more you trust, or the more you become a person of blind faith, the more you're going to lose the ones you love, which is really that theme is resonating huge with me. But it makes sense that he would think that Kevin is some kind of second coming of Jesus or something because, yeah, we all know that he's died and come back. If I were Kevin, I would totally have read that book before burning it.
Yeah, I mean, and I think he does. He doesn't burn it.
Yeah, we don't see him burn it, right?
We see that it's going to – like if you guys watch the preview for the next week,
I didn't
the book's
see it.
Still around.
Oh, okay.
You know what's interesting is imagine for a moment, if you can, you're Jesus, all right? But, like, actually, no, here's a better one. The first Star Wars movie, once they finished filming, Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford flew back in coach. And, like, Carrie Fisher's mom actually called the studio and was like, how dare you let my daughter fly in coach and all this. But the thing is, they were on an airplane with all these people who didn't know who they were. And they just made a movie that could have been a total flop. And that was the last time in their life that ever happened. You know, like, when something great is about to happen, you're always at first kind of skeptical. And like, if he was really Jesus or he was really this thing, like that's a natural reaction. You'd probably be freaked out. Like, guys, I know this is weird, but that's really fucking weird, you know?
But I don't think that's what this show's about. I don't think that's what it's going to be about. It's more about the craziness that people impose on themselves when crazy shit happens or the crazy ideas we come up with. It's less about, oh, wow, this great spiritual supernatural thing is actually happening. Let's explore it. It's more like some crazy shit happened and now everyone is going crazy in their own little micro ways. Does that make sense?
I mean, I still watch this entire show through the extreme skeptic lens.
Yeah.
That everything except for the 2% of the population disappearance can be explained.
Totally.
Like when he jumps in the river and then he survives that because the river drains.
Earthquake.
There was an earthquake, and earthquakes can cause fissures, and a fissure big enough at that exact location could have ripped it open and drained it fast enough. And I even looked at, like, this is super nerdy, but I looked at science and I was like, discussing, like, this is actually possible. And I was like, okay, cool. And, you know, his heart could have popped back and started working after the amount of time it would have taken to bury him a few feet under, and he can still crawl his way out of that because it was a shallow grave.
Even the afterlife thing, like we all have different ways that we would maybe process that. You know, dream state, if you're out cold for several hours. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. Getting shot, not hitting certain organs. I mean, people live from that.
Right.
The bullet did go straight through.
Yeah. So, I mean, none of it is beyond, like, I think one of the best ones, people were like, no, you cannot explain how the son from Family Matters was able to divine about the walnut for Liv Tyler, Meg's character, the significance of the walnut. I'm like, if she called ahead like she did before scheduling an appointment with this guy, He could have Facebook searched, realized that she has problems with dealing with grief of her mother.
Yeah.
Could have called that restaurant, realized that there was something with a walnut and salad. He could have figured out that information.
I'm not as skeptical as you. I do think there is room for the mystical in this show, but I'm not saying that everything we see that looks mystical is mystical.
My only argument is that it's intentionally meant that if one wants to, they can find the rational argument as well.
But I kind of
just lean into experiencing it however I'm going to experience it. Mm-hmm. And then going, I wonder how that would rationally be explained. Because there are some things that are just kind of bizarre.
Well, you know what I think the show should do? Probably isn't going to do it. But here's what I think the show should do. I started this thing season one, and you got all these characters lost. That's the word we keep saying. You know, they've all lost shit, all right? Mm-hmm. You start the season three, they got a lot of that shit back. They got so much of that shit back, now they want more, you know? Like, they're all kind of grasping for, like, a little bigger piece of the pie. You know, it's not just having my family back, I want to have a bigger family. It's not just having my church, I want to have this whole town, like, at my feet. I think if you go one more episode where people keep getting what they want, you know, my relationship with my daughter's going great now too, and then every other person on this show disappears. And then you finish half the season where, like, they've lost these people, that we've lost these people, and it's just, it happens again. Like, right. Boop, they're gone, and now it's like...
Well, that could be a thing that's happening, because we do have that tension wrapping up to the 7th anniversary of the Great Departure.
October 14th.
Where a lot of people...
My wedding anniversary.
Oh, God. I don't remember it now. Where a lot of people think that, you know, there might be another departure. So, yeah, that might happen.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I mean, I don't know. It
would be way too cool.
I mean, this is the final season. They have kind of built up that one super fucking weird thing happened. 2% disappeared. There could be some other event. And, I'm totally on board for a TV show that wanted to jump into the future where something like that does happen again, or something different happens that's also catastrophic, or you know, I've heard theories, or I read theories about the ending that, I mean, we see this birthday party. I'm going to take a few steps back here.
Yeah.
We see the birthday party for Tommy, his son, and they're all wearing these hats, these little crowns. And you see that no one, like, everyone else is taking off their crown, but Kevin's still wearing it because he's this king, right? And I think they're trying to do this sort of Jesus-like comparison intentionally with a lot of the symbolism here. And, they make a point of pointing it out. They talk about the Book of Kevin and how he can't die, and there's something special about him. He's a guy who talks to prophets. He hears voices. Like, all this is built up. And then there's this idea that there's some big event coming in 13 days. And we know he's going to head down under, or that a lot of the production happens down in Australia, mm-hmm. where his mm-hmm. father is. And that's where the end scene is that we get with Carrie Coons on the bike. I heard this theory about the idea that in some way, what if Kevin sacrifices himself akin to Jesus and the 2% come back?
Hmm.
He sacrifices himself and they all come back. And like all those little notes from the doves is like people like, you know, being reunited or whatever. And how do you even cope with, like, once you've gotten over that, these people come back and you're like, ugh.
Right.
No, thanks.
I like that, but I don't see the show being that epic in scale. Yeah, it's such a micro, you know, look at this great tragedy. You know, it's really just all about these people and what's going on with them. And really, I don't see Kevin doing that. You know,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, it wasn't going to be a serious answer. Continue.
What do you think about that ending with her on the bike?
I was just going to ask you. I don't know. The confusing thing I read was that people, comments of Seppenwall's review, people were asking, was that the past? Oh. Like, no, because people don't age in reverse. I mean,
Benjamin Button past.
Yeah, exactly. No, she's obviously like 10, 15 years older. I think it's meant to make us think that she's alone and that she's separated from Kevin, but I don't think that's what's going on.
I mean, it could go either way. He could still be around, and they've changed names and gone into hiding because some shit went down.
I think so.
But, I mean, I would love for the happy ending from such a show that's, like, so bleak mm-hmm. that at least these two get each other.
Yeah.
Because they seem like a better fit. It seems like a happier show with the at least the relationship between Kevin and Nora.
Yeah.
But I also was left with the impression that he's gone. And, you know, when she's that lady, the nun asks about Kevin, she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Peace. I'm out of here. Like, that's some heavy situation mm-hmm. that she doesn't want to discuss in the fact that, like, he's dead, right? I don't know.
Flash forward, I think, for sure. Definitely the whole age thing. No, I think it's interesting that she's the one collecting the doves. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if...
But dismissive of whatever it says. It's just like she's going through some motion.
Yeah.
Which kind of reminded me of, like, the whole relationship between John Murphy and Amy Brenneman, where they're running that scam.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it so that they're letting other people kind of through faith gain the therapy they need mm-hmm. to for grief counseling.
Mm-hmm. You know,
the closure that they need.
I love that scene. It reminded me of, I don't know if it was the season finale or it was towards the later part of season two, but is it Meg? Where you see the flashback of her going to the town for the first time and meeting that psychic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he says to her, whether or not, you know, he's for real or not, but he says to her, he goes, you know, I got the answer, but you won't be satisfied. Like, it's like, you don't want to hear it because it won't be satisfying. And he tells her anyways. And I was like, that is interesting because, yeah, like, the truth isn't what these people want. These people want closure,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So you have to package it as truth in order so they can go on with their lives.
No, or the truth that they need.
Yeah.
The one other mystery, there's a couple, but the one other, I know we're running long on this, but man, I really want to talk about the show. Lily, what do you guys think happened with the adopted daughter that they had? Mike, do you have any theories? Because apparently she's gone. We don't know if she died. We don't know if she was taken away from them in some way.
Right.
She got out. Before shit hit the fan. She
crawled out of there.
Mm-hmm. You know, I kept looking at, the first 20 minutes, I kept looking around for her because there is that impactful end scene in the season two finale where Nora loses her. And it's a beautiful scene when Michael helps her, you know, she finds the baby again. Michael helps her and keeps him safe. And then at the end, the family's together again. But now we have that one missing piece. It's super intriguing. I'm not a huge theory guy. I have no ideas what's going on.
I mean, you know, they made a lot in the second season about, like, the number of people. And people can't come in unless other people leave that are, like, permanent residents.
True.
And, part of me was kind of reminded of that with, like, an extra adopted kid. And, like, how does that fit? And, like, or does she need to... Does she die because there's a certain balance that the city mystically needs to maintain? I don't know.
Well, it looked like they kind of done away with that at the beginning of this season. That they're just letting anybody in. Oh, well, no, I meant like...
you don't need a badge to get into Miracle anymore.
He's like, you don't need a wristband anymore. Just come in.
Yeah, but that's still like for visitors, not like people like posting up a residence. You know, I think they come in, they leave every day.
I wonder if that's even going to be a big... I mean, I guess it is going to be a big deal that the baby's not around, but it feels like they needed to write the baby out because this couple is going to be doing a bunch of shit and you don't want to always see Nora saddled with a baby, I guess.
Yeah. That makes sense. Mm. Plus, hey, why not deal with a little bit more grief on a show that just floods you with it?
Just kill a baby.
Real small side note, I think the best use of a baby on a show ever was that season of The Walking Dead when they first left the prison. And I forget his name, but he was the older black gentleman. He used to wear like a wool cap. He came there with his sister. I think she's still on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, he gets stuck with the baby and the kids. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was good.
Oh my gosh, that's like the perfect, what are we going to do with this baby? I got an idea.
Give it to this guy.
Yeah.
Cuddy. He was Cuddy from The Wire.
That's right.
Yeah, it was great. He's also on The Expanse now.
And It's Always Sunny.
Oh, yeah. Remember that? Well, all right. I'm going to go ahead and stop bugging you guys with my bajillion questions here. And we'll move on really quickly to our last show, which is just going to be you and me, Mike, discussing Better Call Saul's second episode of the season three. And yeah, What do you think? This one definitely picked up the pace from last week's.
Yeah, definitely did. Last week's was such a slow, measured pace. I'm like, man, this season's really doubling down on the really long, methodical, slow pacing, the long scenes of Mike Ehrmantraut just going through the motions without any dialogue. Mm. And what is he doing? There's a little payoff at the end, which is all great. All great. But it's like, okay, I want something to, you know, I want the gears to move a little faster. And the second episode, they really did. And I love, you know, I wasn't exactly looking forward to it, Gus Fring's introduction. Mm-hmm. But I love the way they handled it, where he's just kind of in the background. He shows up, you don't even see his face, but you see that silhouette. You see his yellow shirt, and that's him back there. And you know, I, like I said, I wasn't so excited about another Breaking Bad character coming back here. I'm not against it, but I'm not like, the more this show mirrors Breaking Bad, the better. I'm not in that camp. You know, I want it to be its own thing. But I love Juan Carlos Esposito. I love the character of Gus Fring. And if they do something different or they give us another side of Gus in this season, you know, which I think they're going to do, because that's just the kind of writer that Vince Gilligan is, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's going to be worthwhile. So yeah, these first two episodes are really good. I hate Chuck. Absolutely hate Chuck now. I used to be on the fence. I used to be on the fence about it, but now I'm just like, fuck you, Chuck.
I was reading something where someone was like, do you think this year Chuck is the new Skyler? Where like the things that he's doing, he's actually right. Like no. You shouldn't be lying and scamming your way through life like Jimmy is. Right. But at the same time, Chuck, you asshole. Yes. This is the guy we're rooting for. We're rooting for Jimmy McGill.
Yeah. But it's not just it's
he's a lovable schmuck and he's our schmuck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I guess that's what it comes down to, right? Because it's hard to defend Jimmy sometimes. And sometimes in season two, I was on Chuck's side, but now I'm just the whole elaborate thing where he here's the difference. Jimmy, Chuck really made Jimmy go through so much emotional pain with all that play acting, you know, about his physical condition, his mental condition. And Jimmy was just and even Howard at the law firm thought it was all real, you know, and everyone thought that he was sick and going through all this hell.
Wait, did you guys just spoil that for me?
Wait, he still is.
No, he is, but he play acted it a lot more.
Oh, he upped
it. Yeah,
that.
He upped it a lot.
Which, that's not.
No.
That's not.
Okay.
No.
I was like, that'd be a big spoiler. No,
it's real, but he just upped it a lot more.
No, when he played it up to get the recording.
Yes, he played it up to get the recording, and everyone was just so worried about him. And I don't know, he took it to another level that was just nasty.
Yeah, it's devious in a way that seems a little bit more malevolent than the intent that Jimmy had, that he just wanted to win the contract
for Kim.
For Kim, who had it before they came in and stole it from her anyway.
It was rightfully hers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Initially, you know, and then big dogs came in. You know, going back to Mike, I thought that it was like oddly sloppy, and I don't know if it was like just like what was convenient for the writing of it, but to have Mike send in someone that he knows is somewhat unreliable and like stealth, like Jimmy, to go scout the place, and then which by the way, best scene. It was so hilarious, like how he kept scouting everything, and like I just love when he's
I'm not
like,
obvious.
He's standing there, like pouring all the sugar into this coffee, like trying to
and he's really annoyed that he over sugared the coffee the whole time.
Yeah, that entire sequence, I was just like, I love this, and there's like no dialogue going on here.
Well, you got to remember, like Mike is still kind of new in town.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, so he doesn't know a lot of people he can really trust to do this.
Yeah, but I just seemed unlike him to have Jimmy like leave that place and go right over to his car across the street where he's spying.
Oh, that
part just felt like, you know, even if there was suspicion, I would think that he would like say, rendezvous at another place, not don't come over here.
Yeah.
Or throw in a line where he said, you shouldn't have come over to my car.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a little sloppy.
Yeah.
I think the idea of this season is that Gus Fring is a step ahead of Mike.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what we're seeing.
I mean, do you think that he intentionally led Mike to his restaurant, like as he's testing him? I feel like Mike earned it. Like he earned discovering to that point.
Yeah.
But then once it got to that point, Gus is like, oh, Mike's figured this out.
I'm with you on that.
Send him on a little goose hunt.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting. And yeah, I mean, it pushed that along. I really like that they didn't dangle too much more the consequences of the tape.
The tape, yeah.
Some sort of Chekhov's gun sitting there. I'm like, eventually,
right,
something's got to be done with it.
And but the tape became something else because now Hamlin and the PI witness that whole scene.
Which makes me wonder,
yeah,
is this going to be the thing that makes him have to drop his identity, drop his name, and become Saul?
Right.
Like, at this point, they kind of have him dead to rights in that one aspect.
Well, he is a little crooked.
Yeah, it's like, well, you can't be a lawyer. Well, I can't be a lawyer under that name.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm back.
I hope we get more black and white sequences, more future shots. I don't think we will, because every season they've only done it in the premiere, right?
Yeah, in the premiere and the finale.
In the finale, too. Okay, yeah.
So we'll probably get one again in the finale, but mm-hmm. It would be great if they start peppering them in a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because, man, show is so good. But I guess we can go ahead and wrap things up here. This episode's a little bit longer because I rambled on a lot about Leftovers, but I'm going to do that. Rightfully so. I might make this two different shows that we have to talk about every single week because I can't stop talking about Better Call Saul and I can't stop talking about The Leftovers.
Can you call your spinoff show The Rightovers?
Now I will, yeah.
Hell yeah.
But
man, you don't deserve shit for that one. I'm sorry. I take it back. I'm in your house.
Yeah, don't pat yourself.
Don't be a wrongover.
I like that one.
Mike, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks for the invite. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I'll talk more Leftovers with you.
And where can people find you?
Oh, God. Find me on Twitter at Mike Moody. Follow my new Twitter account at TV on the Pod.
Mm-hmm. And what's the network?
Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
Yes. That's all we're getting to. Kyle, thank you.
Oh, as always, thank you.
And listening audience, we appreciate you guys. And hey, go to our Facebook page. Check out our Facebook Live intro sequence for the first segment that we did. Yeah,
see how the magic's done or how the sausage is made.
Go, oh, that's what they look like. That's what always happens with podcasts. They go, oh. Yeah,
they really are that out of shape, aren't they?
They look like trolls. All right, guys, until next week.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.